It's time to bring you inside the Toronto-Waterloo Innovation Corridor. Join host Todd Cooney and co-host Dean Mariani as they chat with CEOs, founders, and disruptors, some of the most influential people in this tech ecosystem. This is the Startups to Scale-Ups podcast.
Hey there, and welcome to another episode. Today, we are sitting down with two of the three co-founders of Athena Software, Greg and Diane Stanley Horn. For those of you that don't know, Athena Software is an incredibly secure, reliable, and configurable cloud-based case management software for nonprofits and social services. You can find more information about them at athenasoftware.net. So enjoy the episode, and thank you for listening. Okay, today we are sitting down in Athena Software's HQ in Waterloo, Ontario. We're sitting with the two of the three co-founders, Diane and Greg. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Why don't you
give a little bit of background on when you guys started, because it's 17 years, right? How you guys started and when?
Well, it was about 2001. We started out of originally out of Guelph, Ontario, and we came from industry, so we had a sense of sort of what the challenges and the pain points that organizations were going through for their sort of clinical practice, as well as their reporting needs and kind of just administrative functions and struggling to deal with sort of the growing demands of dealing with larger and larger volumes of clients, as well as the complexities of different types of service care metrics and or modalities with their clients, and then also the reporting needs as well. And so there, we did some pretty extensive research around beyond the groups that we were already working with, and we just saw a real market opportunity there that was unfulfilled, particularly with web-based software that would be configurable by the organizations themselves without having to do any sort of custom writing themselves or coding themselves, something that would be a scalable platform for them that would be diverse enough to support their growing needs and their ambitions in terms of the types of services they were providing. And so we got a small team together. We bootstrapped from scratch, and Diana and Kevin and some others who are still here today built our first sort of iterations of our software case manager platform.
You kind of led me into this next question. Talk a little bit about how you finance this business from inception all the way until today.
Well, we had a couple early sort of alpha clients who are willing to work with us and help help us, I guess, develop the software originally to sort of meet their needs. And so that provided a little bit of sort of certainty for us. And we did sort of basically odd jobs on the side, like websites and different kinds of things to get going. Smaller software products that were, for example, an outcomes evaluation product that was sort of a small a product that was used by family service agencies across Canada. We leveraged that and integrated actually into the larger application that we built a little bit later. We had some other smaller products as well, but we just did whatever it took basically to get enough money to be able to expand and grow the company and realize our vision.
Yeah. We were lucky enough to work with some larger clients early on that offered a diversity of services, and so that gave us exposure into a range of service sectors that enabled us to grow more quickly early on within those service sectors themselves. So a multi-service counseling organization might provide domestic violence services and sexual assault, addiction services, as well as counseling, family mediation, etc. And so by working within all of those, and working really closely with those clients and gaining a deep understanding of those service sectors, we were able to then approach organizations that may have been smaller but provided a narrower range of those services and expand quickly there.
Yeah, and then we were lucky from a geographic perspective to get some traction fairly early on with the states. And so we had some large clients in Pennsylvania early on, and then in the Midwest, and then in California. And so that sort of helped us establish a sort of a beachhead or a footprint out there. And we did really well with them, so that allowed us to expand. And then we got some fairly large clients in the UK, and then also in Australia, and then things just expanded from that point. So now we're in, I think, 15 countries around the world, and we've, I think, got 19 time zones that we have to cover.
Wow, that's impressive. Yeah.
So for the average listener that may not know who you are, talk about, you know, Penelope. You know, what is it? Mm-hmm. Who's the target audience? And like, what's the problem you guys are looking to solve with that?
On that one?
Sure. So Penelope is a comprehensive case management solution designed for the social services and mental health sectors. And it will sit at the heart of an organization and help with their administrative functions, including their scheduling and billing, accounts receivables, and other functions within an organization, as well as handling the comprehensive client files and client records and tracking of all the client outcomes and progress through service. So it would be used by not only the administrative staff, but also all of the direct service providers as well. And it's grown in many ways over the years. It handles a number of different kinds of services and service settings and modalities, so individual, couple, family, group services. And as well, this year we are extending it and offering a new product called Client Connect that will actually be a patient portal that'll allow our customers' clients to directly interact with our product as well and work directly with their service providers online.
So some of the organizations that use our software are Canadian National Department of Defense use it for counseling for and sort of relocation support services for people who are in service and they get moved to sort of another base, and so to deal with the counseling and case management services for them and their families and the relocation sort of support services that are required there. We have the Department of National Defense in Australia as well, Veterans Affairs, and so all the post-traumatic stress counseling, sort of addictions, mental health services for active service members as well as their families and veterans over time. We have a lot of behavior health organizations that use our software, a lot of home visiting services for either at-risk moms or at-risk families and kids, child and mental health services. We have some inpatient places, some hospitals, and even police services as well, using it for victim services. So it's a pretty broad group of agencies that use our software.
And so how did this idea get started? Like, it seems like such a niche thing to get into. What kind of influence you guys have to kind of get this going?
Well, I worked at some direct service providers myself in my past life, and I was responsible for understanding how the programs were offered and getting funding for additional services, evaluating the services, designing services, and it really struck me because part of my job was to not only evaluate the services, but report on them and figure out how we're achieving the kind of goals that we were setting out to do, and also some of the challenges about what was holding us back from being able to efficiently service the greater volumes of demand that we were seeing in different populations. And it came down to there's efficiencies were to be had for just in how services were delivered, and also to create a sort of a framework where services could be provided in a consistent framework. So in the past, things were really program by program. So a given organization will have multiple services. Each one was tracked kind of independently. The characteristics were tracked independently. The clients were tracked independently. The kind of performance metrics and outcomes were tracked independently. And so there was a real need, I saw anyways, to try to harmonize it and coordinate those into sort of a common vocabulary across services so that they could speak sort of as an agency and not have such a siloed sort of perspective. And there's a lot of efficiencies and best practices to be deployed there amongst their services, so they have a sort of a common customer experience from their perspective and a sort of a common vocabulary around the outcomes and the service goals that they're trying to achieve. So there was a need for that, and there wasn't any software that did. There's hospital systems that were up here, and then there was like homegrown systems down here, and there wasn't really anything in the middle, and so that was the opportunity that we saw that to fit.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, one of the unique things that sort of differentiates case management software for this sector as compared to, say, medical software is that it really focuses on a family. And so you can have individuals in the system receiving services, but more typically you would have multiple family members that may receive services independently or together, and they might receive a range of services within the organization. And so it's really important in a differentiator to have that sort of model of the family model or a case model.
Yeah, so because you think social services, a lot of it's archaic when you walk in. You found this niche which has been incredible, and you've been able to collect these different data points from your kind of first clientele to who you're attracting now. And it's abroad. You talked about, you know, taking over the globe, which I love to hear. Talk a little bit about like how you're able to adjust based on the individual need, based on the analysis already collected.
Well, our software has some best practice smarts built into its design, which, like as Diane said, it sort of starts with a sort of a case-centered approach, not an individual patient-centered approach. Goes out from there to try to have sort of a common framework for providing a range or continuum of services, or I should say, it provides a sort of a framework where you can track a continuum of services from everything from anonymous kind of services or outreach style services where they're not getting names, you know, things like homelessness outreach services where information and referral through to more community building and advocacy services through to more clinical and services where there's potentially many, many years of service involvement of the provider. So we need to have someone that support that entire spectrum of services. We need to do it in a way where they could define on a service-by-service basis what was important to them, what the outcomes were that they were trying to achieve, what the metrics that they were trying to deliver and report on, and how the worker performance attributes that they wanted to capture as well along the way, but to do it in a way that they could own it and configure it and have it adapt and be flexible and drive their ambitions over time as well. So I think we were successful in doing that. And as we've engaged with them over the years, one of the nice parts about being a global company is you learn a little bit about the best practices in each individual jurisdiction, and you can build that or bake it into the software and then be able to provide it to other parties around the world. And so now we're getting to a point where our clients are really asking us and seeking our prescriptive sort of advice about how best to solve their problems and what do other clients do. And we even have like fairly large organizations asking us as well, where, you know, normally you'd think that they'd already have those answers kind of solved. So I think that's a good position for us to be in, and we add a lot of value on that side as well. So services and the kind of engagement that we work with at our clients to integrate our software within their practice becomes a really, really important part of their success as well. Does that answer your question?
Absolutely.
Bang on. So let's change gears here. Let's talk about culture of your company. I know, you know, even just walking through here, you can feel it. But in your own words, talk about, you know, describe your culture.
As you know, like we don't build widgets here. We basically build outcomes. We empower our agencies to be able to deliver on improving the lives of their clients that they're serving, the patients or communities that they serve. And so just by virtue of that, we're a very mission-driven organization. It sort of ramifies through everything that we do, from sort of marketing to sales to support to the services that I was mentioning earlier and the success work that we do. So being a sort of a mission-driven organization, it's not only a motivating factor, but it's also a good cultural factor as well, because it sort of informs the way that we work with our customers, which is respectful and supportive and engaging, but also how we work together as a team collaboratively. And we find that people are attracted to that kind of environment where they're doing something that's sort of purpose-driven in a way. And because it's so diverse and humbling to work with the clients that we do, how could you not be affected by that? And how could that not motivate you in terms of your career, in terms of the kind of commitment that you would have? And so that's one thing we really benefit from here and we really embrace as well, as that sort of the mission-driven sort of culture. I think it also really helps, when we're looking at our organization in terms of, you know, every sort of aspect of what we do. We have developers, we have marketers, we have salespeople, we have people who are in HR. You know, we have a whole gamut of people, but by connecting them to the outcomes that our clients are trying to achieve, they all feel like they're a part of it. And so we have sort of an NPS engagement that we do with our customers to try to get their continuous feedback of how we're doing and how we can do better. And it's the fruit of the contribution of our entire staff, everybody from the ground floor up. And I think we're all equally motivated and equally sort of driven by that kind of drive to do better for our clients, because we know that the better they're able to support their clients, the better outcomes they'll have and impact they'll have on their communities and the families that they work with, which is, you know, ultimately why we're here.
So it sounds like a very team-driven environment. Mm-hmm. Is there anything you guys do specifically to to enhance like team development?
Well, we have a lot of cultural engagement things that we do with our employees. In terms of everything from like a fun days in Athena, we have kind of a work life balance that we try to support as well. We do a lot of weekly sort of meals together and things awesome. Lots of different kind of fun days and things. So it's something that we focus on, you know, pretty significantly.
And in the last year and a half too, in particular, as the velocity of our growth has increased as well, we've just been really focused as well on incorporating everybody into the strategic vision and into the path that we're heading on, and really being very communicative and collaborative and vocal about that, and making sure that everyone's really passionate about it, because we're really excited about what's been happening and where we're going, and the clients that we're working with. It's very exciting and humbling, and so the more that we can really share and make sure that everyone's in the loop and feels a part of it, the more excited they are too, and that really helps drive the company.
So every time I've been in the office, you almost get a sense of family, right? It's a great dynamic that you have here, and it's a unique one, right? Where, you know, the founders are married and your brother, right? Mm-hmm. So why don't you talk a little bit about, you know, how that sense of family from the early stages kind of carried forward with the workforce that you have now, and talk about, you know, that unique dynamic, because I love my wife. I would love to work with her, you know, 10 to 12 hours a day. I don't think she would put up with me personally, but talk about a little bit about that dynamic.
Yeah, you know, I mean, we do feel like it's a family in many ways, and we work really well together. We always have, and with Kevin too, and we do feel like we have an extended family here, and I think, I do think that the staff feel that as well. I think that they feel like we care about them. We care about what we're doing. We care about who we're helping, and we care about our staff. And people feel, I do believe that people feel that here and appreciate that.
We also have a father and son working here as well.
We do, yeah.
Come on, really?
We have my sister works here as well.
And my brother-in-law, yeah.
I love it. So what about the work-life balance for you two? You know, when you go home at the end of the day, is it,
well,
hey, we leave everything at the office?
Like, we used to have, my desk was here, Diane's desk was here up until like 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
Got some extra space. So we were like working 4 feet apart for 17 years, driving home together.
Yeah, but it's true. There, you do need that separation. And we have kids together, and we have some hobbies together, also separate lives too. Yeah. But so it is important to have that too, and we do work really hard, but we also carve out time where we do not talk about work.
But on a practical level, what having a family, sort of that bond that you have with it, if you can avoid all the kind of quirks that come along with family, the good part is I think you can get to the heart of things a lot quicker than you can maybe by having to skirt around some things with some non-family members. You're a little bit more resilient because you don't take things as personally. You might not be as brittle as you might be in another environment, so you're able to have things out or be frank and have frank and open discussions and not worry about sort of, I don't know, longer term negative effects. Not that but I just mean there's a sort of openness and a resiliency that you have with family that maybe you don't have. The other thing that's really important with us is we're totally different. Like, Diane's different than I am, quite diametrically. Kevin's quite diametrically opposed too. So we have this
balance.
The balance and diversity of opinion that I think has really helped us. We haven't had a traditional CEO. We've done things sort of through consensus over the years as well. And so when you have that kind of openness to have a marketplace of ideas where you can freely express sort of different viewpoints and you value those viewpoints, we bake that into the culture as well. So we just have a bunch of people who are really smart, really passionate with really good ideas, but there's diversity is a treasure that we kind of value and then helped us get to this point.
Talk a little bit about, you know, why Waterloo? You know, you've grown your company organically here in town. Talk about kind of the talent pool that you've had access to and really just your hiring over the years.
Well, we started in Guelph, so, you know, Guelph was a lot harder to hire good developers and good IT talent, and we just thought if we're going to grow this company and scale it, we had to bring it to Waterloo. And luckily we found a good location. We're right uptown Waterloo, which is right on the right on King Street. It's right on the bus routes, and I think 40% of our company commutes through public transit or bicycles or walks.
So biking, that's incredible.
Yeah. So it's
guys
really
are watching your carbon footprint. You guys are carpooling, and other people are, you know, finding other means to get there, which is great.
Well,
we're part of Sustainable Waterloo Region as well, pledging member of that.
Awesome.
Yeah.
So just having, I think, something so close to the university, I think really both universities has really helped, and I don't know, I think. It's a bit of a double-edged sword in terms of we have a lot of steeper competition for good talent here in this area because of you know all the great tech companies that are here. But at the same time, it's been outweighed by I think the benefits that we get from Communitech and the community of tech companies here because they're so open and sharing and supportive. It's not we compete on talent, but we don't compete on anything else it seems, and so they've been really helpful in a lot of other ways that you wouldn't find in other communities. So I think what we really benefited from being here. Sense.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a question we love to ask everyone we interview, and maybe you can both answer it individually. Think back to your 20-year-old self.
Mm-hmm.
What advice are you giving that person?
Do
you want to go first?
No.
I think I went to school for poli sci and you know English and philosophy and things. So I'd never pictured, like I don't even know if there was no internet back then. I remember seeing the Mozilla browser, Mosaic browser for the first time, but it didn't occur to me that you know the web would be so huge and people have most of their commerce and transaction lives online at that point. So I think it was more important as a 20-year-old to just really be a good, smart thinker who can adapt and learn and understand and listens and can adapt to different situations and see opportunities and engage with opportunities. I think if I would have been something that was very focused and very specific, I would, you know, you wouldn't be open to trying to solve different kinds of problems and I don't know. I think the having a sort of a good analytic mind that where you can understand problems and solve problems regardless of the field that they're in was probably the best sort of attribute for me.
I don't know if I have a good answer for that question, to be honest. But, I mean, it's true that I also started in different fields. I was in environmental biology, and I also studied psychology. And really, it was through psychology and then exposure through, you know, a range of volunteer experiences in social services that kind of brought me over into where I am today. It's true that you don't really need to worry at that age about the particular field that you're in because there is always opportunity to grow and change. And I think I was worried at the time, but
picking the right path.
Yeah. And you adapt and you learn, and it's more important to be able to learn and to be passionate about learning and growing. And yeah.
Give me most influential book that you've ever read.
So I don't know about most influential book. I would say that my favorite books from, you know, when I was probably in my late teens is 100 Years of Solitude.
Okay.
Yeah, and Of Human Bondage, both very good books.
Are those influential for you?
I don't know. They probably were influential, but I can't
time, right?
At the time.
Yeah.
Yes, they had, but you're giving me questions I wish you'd seated me with before so I could have thought about them and thought
of
the answers.
We want the authentic answers, you know? Podcasts at all? Do you listen to podcasts or audiobooks?
I like Project Moonbase.
Yeah.
Is a very funny one, yeah. It's not about work. It's it's about sort of these two British guys who have just a really quirky sense of humor and have a real bizarre taste in music. And so they've curated this sort of really ingenious sort of array of music that you wouldn't normally come across.
Very cool.
Project Moonbase. Yeah.
Project Moonbase.
Yeah.
Interesting. Looking 5 years out. You know, where do you see Athena in 5 years? What do you see as, a great goal, the grand goal that we like to say in 5 years? Where do you see the company?
So I can start and you can finish.
Oh, okay,
time,
all right.
I have to give you something to work with, right?
I love it.
So in the last couple of years in particular, we've really been focusing on setting ourselves up to scale up the company. We were growing, bootstrapping for a long time and growing slowly but surely and increasing, growing consistently over time. We've really reoriented ourselves and really put a lot of things in place in the last year and a half in particular to really be able to scale up this company and accelerate the growth and accelerate our impact. We have a 3-year strategic plan that sort of also extends to 5 years, and we are setting ourselves up to follow that plan and really scale the company.
On another level, when it comes to sort of our social impact of the clients that we work with, we calculate that we have about our clients sort of serve 1 million people a year. Actually, probably it's more now. That was a couple of years ago we did. So you'd be looking at 1.5, maybe 2 million people that they serve. I think when we look at some of the sectors that we work with, for example, sort of at-risk mothers who in America with who are considered sort of at risk from their standards and have their first child. There's something like 800,000 moms a year who are in that category. And we serve right now, I think, 280,000 of those moms. I think it would be fantastic if we can get that to be the 100% within about 5 years. And the agencies that we're working with are shooting for that as well. But then also to have that number be not 800,000, but 400,000, just by virtue of there being less risk. And if we can sort of have that kind of impact on that sort of sector and then across other sectors as well, that'd be pretty amazing. We'd be pretty happy with that.
Yeah, I think it's incredible to have, everybody aligned with the same vision as the founders. Everybody's kind of in it. Everybody's got the same morality, right? Which is pretty awesome to see. I really want to know about these fun days at Athena. Like, can we get invited to one of these? Talk a little bit about, like, sure. The last one that you did.
It was a virtual reality one.
Yeah, we went to Control V in Waterloo.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
How was that?
Yeah, that was fun.
It was actually fun. Yeah, it was a great experience. We did curling. We've done an
escape room.
Yeah,
nice. Yeah, successful. Hopefully,
yes. Yes.
Yeah, okay. like a wine tour of Niagara on the Lake.
Yeah. We've taken a ferry ride.
Yeah, quite a few fun ones. Yeah, I like curling.
Curling
fun
and
surprisingly fun.
Bowling,
isn't it?
Yeah. Golfing.
Yeah.
Is there a lot of competition within the office? Do you go out to those events where there's curling or?
Yeah, there is. Surprisingly, yeah. Everybody's got a competitive edge that comes in.
So that's everything I had. And really want to thank you both for kind of sharing the insights on truly, a very successful story within the region. Going 17 years strong. We're hoping for another 17, probably longer than that. Mm. But thank you very much for sitting down and having that conversation with us today.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Startups to Scale-Ups podcast with CBRE's Office Corridor Group. If you know of an incredible founder or tech influencer that should be showcased on our podcast, you can reach us on Instagram at Office Corridor Group or email todd.cooney@cbre.com. And if you like what you hear, please subscribe for more episodes and leave a review.
The podcast you just heard was published with Anchor. Got something you want to say to the creator of this show? Send them a voice message using the Anchor app, free for iOS and Android.